Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future. Living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow, mad cow, mad cow, line dance song.
Hey, Sign Guy Nation, welcome to the show here on another Friday afternoon. QT and Sign Guy with you like normal. Real fast before we jump into it with our guest, if you're looking for some wrestling today, LPW in Springfield, Tennessee, running another benefit show for Tracy Smothers. So if you're in that area, make sure you swing by there and support that. WCWO in Indianapolis, as usual, at 1151 South Kentucky Avenue. Tomorrow night, PPW in Bedford, Indiana. Supreme Pro Wrestling in Madison, Indiana. And SKPW happening in Deptford, New Jersey tomorrow. Without any further ado, though, I want to welcome today's guest on. He is Urban Legend. Welcome to the show today.
Hey, what's going on, man? Thank you for having me on today.
Our pleasure. And since today happens to be your first time with us, we'll start you out with the first-timer question. What led to you getting into this business of pro wrestling?
It's always something my heart has been into, and I had a pretty troubled past as a teenager, as a youth, you know, being in the streets growing up, you know, with the wrong people, and wrestling definitely pulled me out of that crowd, and it's just something my passion grew more and more intense for, not only because I saw it on TV, but it's that's something I've always wanted to do. So I got my start at 18, so found my local school called Southside Pro Wrestling in Virginia at the Ocean Front, and been doing it ever since.
Now, you're in the Virginia area, and that has always been a white-hot place for pro wrestling going back many, many decades. What is the Virginia scene like? Taking it right before the pandemic hit and kind of screwed things up, what would you say the Virginia scene was like at that point?
I think it was chilling. I think Virginia, Maryland, D.C. is really where it's at in terms of talent wrestling. I'm not, you know, dismissing Texas or Florida, but I definitely think D.C. and Maryland, Virginia is definitely underrated in terms of territorial work. I know we have one good solid promotion in Virginia. It was called Vanguard Championship Wrestling. Now it's Virginia Championship Wrestling. But I definitely think Virginia is definitely underappreciated when it comes to pro wrestling.
Now, how much of a historical student of the game would you consider yourself? Do you kind of look back at the promotions that were there 25, 30 years ago, see what was working, what wasn't working for that area, or are you more of just kind of a modern pro wrestler type of guy?
Well, I choose to do, I mean, I know the history, but I'm always a modern, not more so the style, but I'm trying to make wrestling in Virginia evolve. Like, Virginia always used to be an old school territory. I'm not one of the lucha guys, but I'm trying to bring my own flavor to the territory. So I definitely pay attention to Virginia and what, you know, what was around before the move. But I'm trying to bring my own flavor to it.
Now, obviously, wrestling involves travel quite a bit. If you're in the business, you're going to travel some. What would you say has been, to this point, the farthest trip that you've made to wrestle?
I'd say either Florida or Texas for sure. I definitely know going to Houston, driving to Houston was 20 plus hours, and then going to Florida was close to 15. So definitely Texas for sure.
Going to other states like that, I found that a lot of times fans gravitate towards the style that was around in the territory days for that particular area. When you travel to places like that, do you notice a similar thing as far as what the fans like and dislike, or do you find them to be similar to what you face in Virginia?
Every territory is different. I know, you know, up north there's more Canadian stampede technical, you know, then you got the south and that's more old school. Then you got the west coast is more lucha and the east coast is a mixture of a little bit of everything. I don't practice just one style. I'm more all around. I can do anything and everything, and I think that's what makes me different. A lot of these guys have one style, but I was trained for lucha, old school. You know, I'm trained in technical wrestling, so it's like when I go to places like Texas, I know I'm going to be dealing with luchas. When I know I'm going to Florida, I'm going to be dealing with more maybe high-flying technical. If I'm going to New Jersey, New York, I know it's more brawler. So I really like working – I don't really work the South that much, but I know if I'm working like places like Tennessee or Georgia, it's more old school. So there's different flavors in different states.
Definitely agree with you there. Oh, in Virginia, similar to how we are here in Washington State, there is a commission that oversees pro wrestling. Every single state is different as far as commissions and regulations go. Have you had to deal very much with athletic commissions in your career?
I've never had a problem with them except for one, and that was the South Carolina Commission. I was trying to get licensed so I could do the Seek and Destroy Cancer and I think Myrtle Beach. And they took my money and never gave my money back, never got my license. So that's the only issue I've ever had with commission. Now, South Carolina's notorious for being shady. So, yeah, that's the only issue I've ever had. I know Louisiana's a pain in the ass because they make you do blood work, but I've, you know, every commission's different. In Virginia, you can't bleed. So that's the only issue that we got.
I will keep that in mind if I ever come to Virginia. I mentioned at the top of the show that tonight there is a benefit show happening for the late, great Tracy Smothers. There's been a few that have happened already for him. He was a very, very well-respected person within the wrestling community, and the fact that there's so many benefit shows in so many different places kind of paid tribute to him. Did you ever have the opportunity to work with or share a locker room with Tracy Smothers?
Yeah, in fact, I did a seminar. Literally one of the nicest guys I've ever met and got to talk to. We met in North Carolina, and it was Cue Balls. It was a Cue Ball Carmichael and Tracy Smothers seminar. And I believe it was, what's the part of North Carolina? I can't remember. I think it was Boulderville, North Carolina. And it was, and we did this seminar, and I remember Tracy kept saying how he liked my gimmick. So we literally sat there and talked after the seminar for an hour. Literally one of the nicest guys. And I haven't really talked to him, you know. I know he passed away from cancer, but leading up to that, we haven't spoken much. But I got nothing but nice things to say about Tracy. Definitely one of the most respected guys that I had the pleasure of talking to, and I know he'll be missed.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned Tracy liked your gimmick. One of the things that a lot of people have been doing in the pandemic era, especially when places were sort of locked down and weren't able to have shows, is they would update their wrestling gear, order new wrestling gear, so when they started back out, they had kind of a new look and a fresh look. When you go and have gear made, do you have a specific go-to person that makes your gear, or do you go to a variety of people?
No, man, I just go to one person. I actually make all my own jackets, my own headbands. As far as my trunks go, I have Jack Lord in Gadsden, Alabama, Bomberware. He makes all my trunks.
Bomberware is very, very good.
Yeah, so if anybody wants an old school look, he does old school, he does modern, he does high cuts, he does low cuts. Man, Jack's the man. So,
now, if you had to take yourself out of the equation, who would you say in your particular area has the best looking wrestling gear out there?
If I had to take myself out, I'm going to go ahead and give it to the man who taught me about gear in the first place. Diamond Victor Griff by far has the best gear I've ever seen. He's actually the guy who's taught me a lot about my color coordination, what to mix and match, what to make pop, what looks good, what don't look good. So that's another guy that doesn't get enough credit for he deserves. I think he's the closest thing to, I would say, Junkyard Dog. I would say Bad Knees Brown. And I'm going to go ahead and say Jake Roberts for technical reasons. I think he's the closest hybrid to those three ever. And the man, you know, definitely, I think he could definitely make a splash. I definitely think he should be signed. But you talking about gear, I think the guy has tremendous gear. He's a big reason why I know what I'm doing to my gear. So definitely Diamond Victor Griff.
One of the things I have encountered in my own career over the years is a lot of people have very specific rituals when it comes to their tape. A lot of people will tape their wrists and their hands in a certain way every time. Some people write certain sayings or draw certain things on their tape. Some people have specific collars that they use or a specific type of tape that they use. But I've noticed a lot of people are very superstitious when it comes to that. Do you have a specific tape ritual that you use, or have you noticed in others the same type of tape ritual?
I don't know if you've seen any of my work or anything, but I try not to copy other people's rituals. I got my own ritual. Like I tape my fist in my left hand because that's my haymaker. No, I'm sorry. I tape my wrist because that's my jab hand, my left wrist. And my right hand I tape heavily because that's my haymaker hand. Because with me training in Vegas for Mayweather, southpaws tape the right hand. So I always have my left hand open and right hand taped. As far as my ritual goes, I just, you know, say my prayer, listen to some music, do my push-ups, and just get in the zone, nothing special. I might text my people out in Vegas, wish me luck. I might call some of my homies. But, you know, the rituals are something I've always done. You know, I'll throw three or four jabs into a locker and then go out.
You ever get in trouble with the promoter for throwing jabs at the locker in the venues?
Nah, because a lot of lockers don't really use that much. So I just pick a locker and just jab it until my hand starts twitching, and then I just do a few push-ups, and out I go. I don't tape it hitting the locker because it just wakes me up. Some people do pre-workout. Some people do slap themselves. I just punch lockers because it wakes me up and makes me focus. I've never cut my hand because I do it to where I just feel a little something, but I got that from Rocky when he was punching raw meat, and I was like, let me punch his locker. It's the same thing. So that's some stuff I started doing.
Rocky had a pretty successful career, so that's not a bad choice to emulate.
Yeah.
One of the things that a lot of wrestlers will end up doing later in their career, sometimes even earlier in their career, is promoting their own shows. I know a lot of people, once they get into the business, their ultimate goal is to promote their own shows. Have you ever given much consideration to being a wrestling promoter?
No, sir. Here's the problem with a lot of these promoters. There are a lot of marks because they become promoters for the wrong reasons. I'm a wrestler. I'm a talent, and I'm going to stay in that category. I'm not going to take advantage of me being a talent to start my own promotion because that's pretty much not helping anybody. That's going in business for yourself, which is what you're supposed to do. But to me, the most successful promoters is someone who wants to help somebody reach that next level. And a lot of these promoters, I am bearing them, but I've seen a lot hold the championship, not share, not put people in a good storyline so they can grow, putting them front and center. So I don't want to be a self-mark and have that power. I just want to stay as a talent. Yeah. I've seen a lot of people in my career where I'm like, damn, this guy, I guess he wanted to be in a promotion to run shit, do stuff himself. And it's like, is he ever going to share the heat with anybody else, or is he going to be front and center every show? So I don't want to be put in that position. I've never had any – if I wanted to be a promoter, I wouldn't be a talent. You know what I'm saying? So it's like I'm a wrestler and I'm a stay wrestler. I'm not going to – unless I get hurt to where I can't wrestle physically, I'm not going to be doing that.
Well, at this point, we have a game we like to play, and we call this one Bring On the Choice, Bring On the Funk. I'll give you a series of two options, and the one that is your personal preference is the correct answer. Are you prepared for some Bring On the Choice, Bring On the Funk?
Go ahead, man. Let me see it.
Here we go. Leg drop or knee drop?
Knee drop.
Sleeper hold or full Nelson?
Sleeper hold.
Jackknife cover or a small package?
Small package.
Lowe's or Home Depot?
Lowe's.
Comedy or drama?
Drama.
Leather or silk?
Silk.
ECW or Ring of Honor?
ECW.
Billy Gunn or Billy Kidman?
Billy Gunn.
The last one, trunks or tights?
Trunks.
All right. Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I know that he has questions as well, so I'm going to pass things to him for a bit.
Well, thank you, Sangai. Hello, Mr. Legend. Mr. Legend, I saw your YouTube video entitled Phil Brown versus Irvin Legend, Last Man Standing Match. It was for BCW Liberty Lottery. The announcer, the start of the video, was Black Chadwick, maybe Black Chadwick. And he was dressed in a white shirt, a dark suit coat, and a striped tie. Do you remember how well-dressed he was?
No, man. I wasn't really paying attention to what Blake Chadwick was wearing.
Oh, okay. Well, your homework assignment is to go back to this video and look at how well-dressed Black Chadwick was. He was very impressive.
Yeah. The one thing I noticed about Blake Chadwick is that every show he's on, his getup is good. But I was more so concerned about the feeling of the fans and the match, man. I don't focus on stuff like that. But if it makes you feel any better, I'll go back and watch what he's wearing.
Oh, okay. I would hazard a guess that Blake Chadwick would be in your top three of all time well-dressed persons in videos that you have been in, the top three, after you do some video analysis, after you go back and watch a video. That's my guess.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Well, Mr. Legend, the ring announcer, who was also nicely dressed, announced your weight at 200 pounds. My question is, after a McDonald's Happy Meal, do you skip the scales at 201 pounds and one quarter?
No, sir. I stay at 200 all year round unless I'm trying to put on weight for something. I don't eat fast food.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, if you maintain that weight at 200 pounds even, you probably don't go to McDonald's. Okay.
No, man. No, I don't eat fast food.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Legend, the ring announcer also called you Mr. Moneymaker Neckbreaker. My question is, did your mom and dad teach you the concept of compounding interest for your bank accounts at a young age?
Hey, man, am I talking to an actual human being with these questions? Because
sure. Yes.
Yeah,
these
man,
are,
my mom and dad, my mama's passed away, so I didn't come on here to talk about my mom and my dad, bro. I'd rather just keep this wrestling, not questions like that.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Legend, is it true that Phil Brown, who you knocked out with a roll of quarters, once tried to be a member of the WWE tag team Crime Time?
I don't know where you got that information from.
Oh, okay. I have my wrestling sources out here in Washington State that told me that he tried to try out for a Crime Time.
They told you he tried out for Crime Time?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Legend, have you met Phil Brown since this match in his hometown of Bad News, Philadelphia?
Not Philadelphia, Newport News, and he's actually in Florida right now.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right. Okay. Well, Mr. Legend, you told Sign Guy that you jab lockers some of the times as a warm-up. Do you remember one of the greatest lightweight and welterweight fighters of all time, Hands of Stone, Roberto Duran?
Yes.
Oh, okay. How did you like his trilogy of fights with Sugar Ray Leonard?
Yeah, they were all right.
Okay.
I mean, I got my all-time favorite boxer, so, I mean, but they were all right.
Wow, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Legend, at the 4 minute and 44-second mark, Phil gave you a hard knife-edged chop. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners what the hardest knife-edged chop you have ever received?
Probably from Gangrel.
Gangrel, ooh, okay. And, you know, I think I've heard that on our show before. He's a very hard knife-edged chopper. Have you ever received a knife-edged chop from a wrestler named Madman Pondo?
No, I have not. Never worked him.
Okay. Well, Mr. Legend, would you agree that Phil Brown bears a striking resemblance to former NFL player and MMA fighter Warren Sapp?
No, disagree, but I do say he looked a little bit like King Mo. Definitely not Warren Sapp.
Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Legend, the referee did not check Phil for foreign objects. Did you pull the referee aside and tell him he was unprofessional after the match?
No. And there was one part of the match where I was pissed off, but that was the nine count. That was the count. Because if you watch the close intense, the tape intensely at the end, when he got to 8.5, 9.5, I was already up. He shouldn't have counted me out to 10. I was standing up.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, Phil, you wore black trunks with yellow lettering in this match. Were you a big fan of the tag team, the Killer Bees, Jumpin' Jim Bronzell and B. Brian Blair?
Yes, that's actually where I played Thomas Toon with the trunks.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, Phil, did you know that Jumpin' Jim Bronzell got his nickname because he went out for track and field for his high school, and he won a state championship in the high jump?
Before I answer this question, did you just call me Phil Brown?
What's that? No, I may have been dyslexic and mistook some of my notes, I think. Yes, that happens sometimes on the show. I guess
okay.
I'm very note messed up myself. Yes, dyslexic. Okay.
All right. It's all good, man.
But anyway, do you know that he won a state championship for his high school in the high jump?
Yes, I'm aware of that.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Legend, how many T-shirts would you say you have sold at an event? The most T-shirts. Have you received triple digits in sales before?
No, sir, because I'm an old school heel, and old school's heels are not meant for merchandise, so I have sold zero T-shirts.
Oh, okay. So you have definite links to kayfabe, trying to stay in the back and not greet the fans?
I will take a picture with me. I have this mentality, right? So as a heel, now if I was a babyface, I'd be selling merchandise, of course. But if I am a heel, here's what I don't understand about heels. If you're a heel, unless you're selling on a website and don't know about it, you should not sell merchandise. If you don't give a crap about the fans, why are you going out asking them to buy the merch? You shouldn't care whether they support you or not. There was a few times where I had to go out and take a picture, but I was not a nice guy. So I kayfabe is dead. I just always believe in staying in character no matter where I go.
Wow, kind of like Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah, so if I slip up at a grocery store, who's to say a kid don't seem out of character? He's like, Urban Legend ain't really an arrogant prick. He's a nice guy. I'm not really that much of a nice guy. You know, kind of in real life, I'm kind of private. But it's like, if I see somebody that goes to my shows, I'm in character the entire time. The Urban Legend you see in the ring is the Urban Legend you're going to get outside the ring, unless I personally know you. So I believe in staying in character at all times.
Wow, okay, very good. All right. Okay. Well, Mr. Legend, Sign Guy earlier had the game that we played, Bring on the Choice, Bring on the Funk, and you have a choice between two subject matters. You did very well. I have one for you. NWO or the Four Horsemen?
Yeah, it's an easy choice, and I will always pick the Four Horsemen over the NWO.
Wow, all right. Who is your favorite Four Horsemen, your number one ranked Four Horsemen?
Oh, that is tough. But if I have to pick one, I would have to say Flair.
Oh, okay. All right, Ric Flair. Very good. Okay. Well, Mr. Legend, were you a big fan of Shawn Michaels and his Sweet Chin music?
I'm actually not really that much of a Superkick guy. I like Shawn, but I'm not really a Superkick fan.
Oh, okay. All right. Is MMA part of your training?
Yes, and boxing.
Oh, okay, boxing. No wonder why you knew of Roberto Hands of Stone Duran. Yes, most wrestlers that we interview on the show don't really know fighters from the 70s like you do.
Yeah,
Roberto Duran. How about Hector Macho Camacho?
Say who?
How about Hector Macho Camacho? Did you ever watch a film of him?
I've actually never watched him, but I know of him. I probably should, but, you know, people ask me who my favorite boxer is. I'm actually trained. My favorite boxer of all time is Floyd Mayweather, and I actually trained in his boxing camp. So I'm very fortunate for that opportunity.
Wow, okay. Would you say that you're a boxing aficionado and you go back to the 40s and 50s and watch the old boxing matches on YouTube? Like, if I mentioned the fighter Rocky Graziano or Tony Zale?
Yeah, I know Rocky Marciano. I put him in my top five.
Oh, okay. I said Rocky Graziano. There was also Rocky Marciano. There's two of them.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Legend, it was good talking with you. And I may have called you by your opponent, but again, that was from my dyslexic and disorganization. And at that, this time, I'm turning it back to the Sign Guy.
I got you.
Thank you, QT. Well, Urban Legend, in pro wrestling, if you've spent any time at all in it, you know that there's going to be the occasional injury pop up, whether it's something minor that you work through or a major injury that takes you out for a while. To this point in your career, what are some of the injuries that you had to overcome?
Ruptured eardrum, broken ribs, separated shoulder, torn quadriceps, concussions, broken nose, broken over the bone. I've had quite a few injuries.
I've had a few of those myself personally as well. One of the things that I personally dislike the most was the shoulder injury. That seems to be something that takes a while to heal and seems to never be the same once you injure it the first time. Have you had particular trouble with the shoulder, keeping it maintained and injury-free after you initially injured it?
Yeah, I have a rotator cuff problem, so every once in a while I have to do special training to strengthen my cuff up, because I think out of all the injuries, my shoulder is always the one that lingers. So it definitely sucks. And one would think you tear your quad, that lingers. Well, the shoulders have way more cartilage than the leg, so my left shoulder gives me trouble from time to time. And it might be a permanent thing, you know, if I keep messing it up. The thing about shoulders is once you dislocate it or break it, you can always do it easier. Do it again.
That is very, very true. Now, on the independent circuit, I know that things are more of a bare bones type of situation usually, and depending on individual state commissions, it will vary. But on shows that you do, are there medical personnel on hand in case there are injuries, someone that's got a type of medical background to step in if someone's hurt?
I know we try to, VCW, try to have some sort of medical personnel there. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. That's another thing I wanted to say is I believe whether you're on the independent or the signed, there should be medical personnel at every show because you never know when somebody's going to need it. Prime example is like Daniel the Spider Quirk was an independent wrestler, and I remember he cracked his head open at a show and like died. There's been a lot of scary incidents lately. I mean, with Daniel over a decade ago, and this luchador had a heart attack in the ring. So I like in Mexico, so there should always be medical personnel at every show. Like if you need to be willing to spend that extra money to keep us safe. You know, that has to be something that needs to change when the pandemic's over. If one thing I want to change about wrestling, I want more medical personnel.
One of the more hot button topics in wrestling is something related to that, and that is what the role of the promotion should be when it comes to concussions. Some people feel that it should be up to the individual wrestlers to police themselves if there's a concussion. Some places feel like there should be protocols and guidelines that the promotions have to follow if they know someone has a concussion. Where do you stand when it comes to what should or should not be done if a wrestler has a concussion?
Well, coming from someone who had a concussion and who has had to get over post-concussion syndrome, stage one, which I'm in a lot of talks with the Concussion Legacy Foundation, which I'm, you know, after I pass on, I'm going to donate my brain for study. But for somebody who has had concussions, I believe it is up to the individual to get the treatment he deserves. And then if the promoter knows that the talent has had a concussion, they should not let them compete for however long until they get a doctor's note saying that he's cleared his concussion testing. That should be a mandatory thing. So if you're on record or if you had a history of concussion, you need to get scanned before you work.
Several years ago, a film came out that sort of chronicled what a former nationally known wrestler was going through on the independent circuit. That movie was The Wrestler. Some people feel that they didn't do the best of jobs depicting on what life would really be like for a wrestler. Some people thought it was somewhat accurate. Did you see the film and have an opinion on it?
The more I watch it, the more I think how completely inaccurate it is. I can get behind living with them under a minivan or drugs and stuff. I mean, yeah, that was accurate, but in terms of the only time I can get behind the movie is if, you know, a lot of indie guys do hardcore deathmatch stuff. But I think the movie in itself was not accurate at all. It just made us, it portrayed us to be like steroid junkies and banging hookers, and it wasn't accurate. Didn't like it. Nothing against Mickey Rourke, but they pretty much did not glorify us in a good way. They made us, you know, yeah, the wrestling business is rock stars, it's sex, it's drugs, but they pretty much made all indie wrestlers look like pieces of shit. So I did not like that movie. I mean, the ending was accurate as well, because there's a lot of guys who don't know when to give it up, but in terms of like 10 out of 10, I give it like a 4.
Looking at the entire history of pro wrestling in film version, you can go all the way back to the early days of film and pick any of them. What would you say was the most accurate wrestling-based movie?
Movie? That's a tricky one, man. I think the Page fighting with family was pretty accurate, because, you know, it just showed, you know, her coming from a family of wrestlers in the indies and then getting signed, and I definitely think that was a pretty accurate. There's not really that many wrestling movies like that, unless it's about, you know, autobiography, but the Page wrestling with family was definitely. Now, if you're talking about like documentaries, I mean, you got, you know, Behind the Ring. I mean, Dark Side of the Ring too. But,
definitely, yeah. Now, another sort of hot button topic lately in wrestling is intergender matches and mixed tag team matches. Some people feel that it's sort of an outdated concept in wrestling. A lot of people still enjoy watching them if they're done right. Have you ever done either an intergender match or a mixed tag team match with a lady wrestler?
I've done a mixed tag, but I will never ever do intergender wrestling, and let me tell you why. I'm not trying to shit on women wrestling. Women wrestling deserve all the credit in the world. But you telling me a 115-pound woman could throw me around like nothing, and then, you know, the shit hits the fan one night and we're labeled as the bad people for... Listen, intergender wrestling opens the door for domestic violence. So, like, if I put the boots to a woman in the corner, what happens if a drunk sees that and says, oh, Urban Legend's beating up a woman, let me do that to my girl when I get home? And that's on me. So it's like, genetically, a male is more strong than a woman, a female. So, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but come on, you really think, you know, a female could throw me across the ring with no problem or flip me with her legs? Unless they're Ronda Rousey or one of the female MMA wrestlers, I don't think so. So I don't agree, and I don't like intergender wrestling. But I'll definitely do a mixed tag. It's not believable. Intergender is not believable at all, unless I'm facing someone like, you know, a bigger woman, you know, that like alpha female, or what's that one? That one woman signed up, Ring of Honor, Mercedes Martinez, not Ring of Honor, she's in NXT. Unless it's something like a badass like that, it ain't believable. I mean, that's why I just smack my head when I see like a male wrestler get flipped by, you know, a Canadian power drive by a female wrestler. It just don't make no sense. It makes them look weak. They're making themselves look weak by trying to make them look strong. If you did it the right way, you wouldn't have to do that. So I've never liked intergender wrestling at all.
I know in some promotions, they have an actual mixed tag team division and championships. They're sort of rare, but they're out there. If promotions that you work for were to introduce a mixed tag team division, who would you say would be the most likely candidate for you to tag with in that division?
As far as a woman?
Yes.
If I could pick any female wrestler right now, who would I pick?
Correct.
I'm not just saying this. I think she's a badass. I think me and Maria Manic could do some damage.
I could definitely see that, yeah. It's a good choice. One of the things that a lot of wrestlers that get into the business have a goal or a dream to do is to go to Japan to wrestle. In the last few years, more and more independent-based wrestlers have been going to Japan to work on shows. When travel restrictions are lifted and things are more normal, is wrestling in Japan something that you would like to accomplish?
Absolutely. I would definitely like to, you know, do some New Japan work too. Me and my friend David Benoit just talked about doing Japan when wrestling starts back up.
In recent times, another goal has been to get to Europe. We've seen a lot of independent wrestlers in the last couple of years going to places like England and Germany and Austria. The country of Romania just started professional wrestling a few months ago. Is going to Europe to tour around the continent of Europe something that would interest you?
Yeah, I think so. Definitely.
I'm watching a lot of the European style. It's usually more mat-based, usually fairly heavy with submission type of wrestling. Are matches that feature predominantly mat-based and submission-based wrestling something that is like common for you to come across, or do you not see a lot of it in your area?
Virginia, you know, we have a little bit of everything in terms of style. That's why I really like when I'm in the ring with someone who's mat-based, because I'm more of a technical wrestler myself.
If you had to pick one person in the history of wrestling that you would most like to wrestle a mat-based technical style match with, just as a dream opponent throughout history, who would you pick as that person?
Me versus Chris Benoit.
Interesting choice for sure. Now, one of the things that pro wrestling likes to do as far as just industry-wide is travel to entertain the men and women of the armed forces. I know a lot of USO tours get put together every year, and they travel not only all over the United States to wrestle on bases around this country, but they go internationally and tour the bases in foreign ports as well. Have you ever personally competed on one of the military installations?
No, I've never done it, but I would love to one day.
Fairly popular with the military base shows, usually, not always, but usually you see a military base type of wrestler, someone that will wrestle in the fatigues or the camo or what have you. Do you come across many of the military base type of wrestlers in your area, or is that something that is kind of out of style right now?
It's kind of out of style. You want a military base, I'd say go to Texas. Virginia don't have
okay.
that much of that.
Now, in the history of wrestling, it's not as common these days from where we are, but I'm sure it still happens. Occasionally when wrestlers go out, fans will want to try to test them physically and start trouble when they're out at a bar or a nightclub or whatever. Have you ever run into a situation where fans have approached you and wanted to try to test you physically to see if you were as tough as what they saw in the ring?
I've dealt with that a lot, and I laugh every single time because people don't understand as I'm a former Golden Gloves boxing champion too. So I don't think they want to do that.
At least they wouldn't after the fight, I'm sure.
I'm a nice guy, kind of, but I'm from the streets. So it don't matter who challenges me, whether you're a fan, a mark, or work, or whatever. You get in my face, you better know how to throw it.
I know in the Virginia area, just traditionally, the fans there have been a little bit more passionate, a little bit more prone to trying to get at wrestlers. We've heard all kinds of stories over the years from people that worked in the Crockett days in Virginia and so forth, of guys being stabbed or being punched on the way to the ring and so forth. When you travel to places like Florida and like Texas, do you see a difference in that type of thing? Do you think that it's more common in Virginia, or do you think it's less common?
I think people, no matter where you go, are frisky. It's just the people that there's a lot of people you got to watch out for. I mean, not a lot of people are going to mess with me, but I've had a few try, and a lot of them have actually regretted that super quick.
Now, one of the things that we're getting into here in pro wrestling is the advent of the streaming era, where there are so many streaming services out there now that professional wrestling has become more accessible to fans outside of your promotional area. You can get one of the streaming services like Powerbomb TV or the IWTV or what have you. The major companies pretty much all have their own streaming services, but it allows fans the chance to watch, especially on the independent wrestling, more promotions and more wrestlers that exist outside of, say, a 20-mile radius of where they're at, where in years past that was the confines of what they could see. Do you think overall that the streaming services and streaming live shows is going to be beneficial to wrestling, or do you think that it might hurt as far as live attendance with the ability to stream it?
I think it's a good bridge. I mean, there's nothing like live events, but I think if streaming ain't entirely a bad thing, I just hope that they don't overdo it.
Agreed with you there. Well, we're coming down to the last few minutes in today's show, and I want to make sure that you have plenty of opportunity. If there's anything at all that you would like to say to the listeners, plug and promote anything and everything, social medias, upcoming appearances, merchandise, your favorite dry cleaner, anything in the world you would like, floor is yours.
All right. So first off, I want to start with follow me on Instagram at Urban Legend Official, and then my Facebook is Urban Legend, and my Twitter is Money Man Legend. I got a Daniel Pewter podcast coming up on December 15th at 5 p.m. on Facebook Live, so tune into that. And then I got a Cypher Knowledge podcast on Facebook Live on December 20th at 7 p.m., so check that out. And I hope everybody stays safe, and hopefully your love of wrestling don't die out of this pandemic. You know, people just keep supporting what we do, and hopefully, you know, the world will go back to normal one of these days and we all perform again.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with you there. Well, Urban Legend, it has been a pleasure having you here on our show today. We want to thank you very much for taking the time out to be with us, and hopefully we'll get to do it again sometime.
Yeah, man, we'll definitely get part two.
All right. Well, fans, definitely, once things get up and running, if Urban Legend's on a show near you, go check him out. Great talent. I think you will enjoy him. So check out what he does. Support him. And we'll be back with you Sunday afternoon. We will have the Caribbean Tiger with us. So make sure you plan to be with us then. And we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.